It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This is Tyrese Haliburton, and you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Indiana, home of Pacers basketball.
Miller for three, and he got it.
Legends have been born.
Miller retreats to the three-point line and hits again.
Memories have been made.
Haliburton, a deep three for the lead.
And baby!
Great basketball has been played.
Nembhard away. Hits a three at the buzzer.
In 49 states, it's just basketball.
Flips it to the big fella, fake, shoots, and hit!
But this is Indiana. And you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Let's go! Go!
Your go-to Pacers podcast.
Setting the Pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the Pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the Pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the Pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. We got Pacers hooping, let's talk stats. Hot takes, all facts. New topics, updates. Three-pointers, fast breaks. We keep scoring, we don't need to stop. New episodes, weekly drops. This your number one podcast. Sweeping every team, we gon' need a mop. Setting like pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison. Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci. Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Happy Tuesday, Pacer Nation. What is going on? Welcome back to your go-to Pacers podcast, Setting the Pace. I'm your host, Alex Golden, and joining me today is Michael A. Fauci. Fauci, how's it going, brother?
Hey, doing great. I mean, how could you complain being up 3-1? Only complaint I have is I wish the game was tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad they get a break just because they need some rest, but the Bucks would be at a much worse advantage if they had to play a back-to-back after all the injuries they've had stacked up against them. But clearly, Tuesday, it's going to be a fun game. The only problem is a 9:30 tip-off. I am dreading this. I am so going to be tired. I mean, we're not going to finish recording till after midnight. Time we get edited, uploaded. Oh, my goodness. I'm already thinking about the amount of sleep I'm going to lose.
Yeah, that's going to be tough. Honestly, I was dreading even the Sunday one. I was like, okay, hey, look, you know, talking about tip-off just after 7. All right, by the time the game ends, you know, you're at the game. By the time you finish recording, oh, man, 9:30? Oh, my God, that's a whole nother thing. And I know I'm showing my age. I'm a man in his 30s. Yes, I mean, oh, God, I got to go to bed early. But, you know, it's just this series has been all over the place between the games at 5:30 on a Friday or you're playing at 7:30 and then you're playing at 9:30. It's just weird. I look forward to once we beat the Bucks and go to the second round. I'm knocking on wood, everybody. Don't worry. It's going to be more of a stable schedule across the league, and I think there's going to be that consistency, no one having to leave work early to catch a 5:30 game or anything of that sort.
Yeah, 5:30 tip-off going, you know, two games later to a 9:30 tip-off. It's just all over the map with the playoffs. But because the Wolves swept the Suns, Indiana gets the TNT game, the second game at 9:30. In Milwaukee, it's only 8:30 at the Central Time there, so not too late of a start for the Bucks fans. But I will say this, Fauci. I listened to about 30-ish minutes of our friends at the Eurostep Podcast Network, GSPN.
Curious on that one.
Ty Windish, Rowan Cotty, good friends of ours, have been on this podcast several different times throughout the years. They didn't even record after the game last night. They said they were both feeling kind of meh. I think Rowan had a headache, and Ty said he just wasn't feeling good. So they recorded in the morning. They had to sleep on that one. I mean, it's down bad for the Bucks right now, and they're proud of their team for fighting. But like, what's the point of staying up late and talking about another loss in the playoffs when you can go to bed and wake up in the morning? I'm hoping that we're staying up Tuesday night for a Pacers victory.
I would rather be exhausted, but just fighting through and giving you guys everything I got on the microphone if it means that we won. And you and I, look, we've limped to this microphone before after a tough loss to the Bulls. DeMar DeRozan hits a crazy shot and you got to record after it. It stinks, but there's nothing like recording after a big win. I understand that feeling for the Bucks, but that says a lot when after a playoff game you're like, we can't even do it. Let's just sleep on this, wake up early, that. So, yeah, Bucks fans, they're definitely hurting. I feel for them. Injuries, it's adding up. The frustration's got to be at an all-time high. I think for the Bucks fan base, they're probably looking forward to tuning out a little bit. I'm sure the players have a little bit more incentive as to say, hey, let's keep playing. I'm sure those fans have been through the highs and lows of this season. But for the Pacers, you know, and our fan base, we're riding sky high right now. This is a place that we have not been in quite some time, and I can't get enough Pacer basketball.
You're right about that, Fauci, and it's going to be an interesting game. We're going to get into all that with Matty Chandler of 8 points, 9 seconds here in the second segment. But before we get to that, we need to talk about the road to recovery here, Fauci, brought to you by Unified Healing. And it's time to look at these injuries because the injuries are going to play a big factor. Before we get into the Pacers injuries, let's look at the Bucks injuries. A lot of question marks. Will Chris Middleton play? Will Patrick Beverley play? What's going on with Dame? Is he going to come back? Is Giannis going to make his debut? Well, we got the injury report. Those four players were on it. Can you please go ahead and let everybody know what their status is?
So for Dame, doubtful. Giannis, doubtful. As it relates to, you know, Chris Middleton, Pat Bev, those guys, I believe they might be listed as questionable, but probable. They are most probable. They are most definitely going to be out there for that game. There is no doubt in my mind that those are players that are going to be suiting up. And I think that the big loss over there is obviously Dame and Giannis. You don't know if they're going to return for this series or, in Giannis's case, even make his series debut. And for the Bucks, I think that injury list, it's piling up. And I think they're probably looking forward to getting healthy in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, the road to recovery for Giannis is just like come back ready for next season. It feels like at this point, the fact that he's been ruled doubtful again and Dame doubtful before game five's day even gets here, like on Monday night at like 5:30 on the injury report. That's what happened on Saturday after the Pacers won Friday. They said Saturday Dame was doubtful to play, Giannis doubtful to play. They were ruled out like 7-8 hours before the tip-off time. So there's a very good chance that those two players will not play in game five. I would actually bank on that. And you know what? I think that's a smart move. I don't really know what the end game is here for the Bucks. I mean, obviously they want to get out of the first round. They want to win as many playoff series as they can, but at what cost? And is it going to keep their main guys that could be really pivotal for a championship run next year and maybe a little bit more stability next year? I just think making a coaching change in the middle of the season, that never usually works out. You get a whole entire offseason with Doc Rivers as your head coach, get your guys healthy, a little bit more chemistry has evolved. Maybe you revamp the roster a little bit to get more younger and not be so veteran heavy and find a way to get this team a little bit more, I think, dynamic than what they are right now. I think they're still a very, very talented team. I mean, they're competing at a high, high level without their best players and really making it hard. I think that also kind of speaks to the Pacers and what they are as a team still too and what they lack. But I'll just say this, like I'm happy that we haven't seen Giannis for the Pacers' sake, but in terms of just seeing this team, these two teams face off with both healthy, we missed out on a great opportunity here, Fauci, for some bloodbaths between these two franchises.
So it would have been a very, very intense series. And look, let's be honest, it's far from over. I mean, the Pacers still need to handle business in game five.
True.
And if they don't, then things get scary. But yeah, if you had Giannis, who you got to remember averaged 42 points per game against the Pacers, I mean, there was a game they shot 32 free throws,
yeah,
you know, just by himself. He's a big difference maker. Dame, we saw what he could do. He had, you know, 35 point first halves against the Pacers early in this playoffs. And then along the way, Chris Middleton, while yes, he's going to be on the court, this man's giving you everything he's got, limping from game to game. Those ankles, I mean, those aren't young legs that he has. So I think that's a man that probably needs some much-needed rest in this offseason. And then on the Pacers side, the only guy that we don't have right now, the Pacers are blessed to, you know, have a healthy team for the most part. Benedict Mathurin, you know, he's got a long road to recovery ahead of him, that shoulder injury. You know, Mathurin's someone that you kind of miss just seeing out there. And he was someone who played very well against the Pacers. I mean, against the Bucks this year for the Pacers. But lastly, I think when you're talking about the road to recovery, it was Tyrese Halliburton's hamstring for quite some time. Now it's the lower back, and you got to hope that that back stays intact.
Yeah, he is once again listed as questionable. He was a late game addition to the injury report on Sunday night. He apparently felt some spasms flare up while he was doing his pregame warmups. And usually after we get done with our interviews with the coaches pregame, when we go out onto the court, Tyrese is finishing up his workout and then watching film. And I didn't see Tyrese out there at all when I first came out there. And I thought, that's kind of weird. Did he finish up early tonight? And then all of a sudden I saw that he was added to the injury report, was able to play through it. And Tyrese talked about it. He even said that he was very close to not playing in that game, but their medical staff did wonders and was able to kind of get those spasms controllable, pain tolerance wise, that he could play through it. And he actually had a very good game. So, you know, I don't think he was as spunky or as spry as he was in game three, but he was still very active in getting his 3-point shot off and attacking the mismatches in game four. So big opportunity here for Tyrese Halliburton to win game five in his hometown of, you know, Wisconsin. Grew up a Bucks fan, grew up in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. But yeah, I just think for him, obviously, the road to recovery, he just needs to be ready ASAP. But for Benedict Mathurin, this is a great opportunity for him too, Faji. I know that he's not playing in the games, but for him to be a part of this playoff team and being on the bench and kind of observing everything, this is a mental opportunity for him to kind of just absorb everything that's happening, be that sponge that he needs to be and soak it all in. And that way, I honestly think when he comes back from that shoulder injury, if he can just, you know, maintain that shot that he had established this year, shooting the ball well, and get back to the level of play that we saw him play with before he was, you know, sidelined, I think this is going to give Benedict Mathurin more of a chip on his shoulder to get to the playoffs, to have that experience for himself, since he's not really getting that on-court experience this year.
Chip on the shoulder is the exact expression I was thinking of, because I feel like when you're Mathurin, you're looking for that edge. You're looking for something to push you. And I think that right now he's seeing that this team has had a lot of success without him. And I think that that might make him hungry to say, hey, what could this team be with me? And when you think about players that have missed, you know, a lot of time, Chet Holmgren sat out all of last year for the Thunder. That's someone who came back, played all 82 games, started all 82 games, and has been a big piece for OKC and what they're doing. Hopefully, Mathurin has his eyes open, his ears, you know, open, taking in everything that he could possibly see and working his butt off this offseason. Not only get healthy, but take his game to the next level, because you know, we might not see it this series, but moving forward, I can promise you the Pacers are going to wish that they had Mathurin out there on nights where that bench unit can't find their shot. That's really where Benedict Mathurin was able to come in and really help his team.
Yeah, and I honestly felt like maybe in game three, he might have been out there instead of Nesmith, because Nesmith was really struggling offensively, just taking a lot of bad shots, couldn't really hit any threes. Now, it paid off because Nesmith did end up hitting the game winner, or the go-ahead three, excuse me, in the left corner, right in front of the Bucks bench. But I feel like Mathurin's scoring would just be so lethal in this series. Like, it's an under-talked about point that if they had a healthy Mathurin, I mean, they're a totally different ball club. And maybe some of these games that have been close aren't as close just because he's another guy that can just score in isolation. They don't have a lot of guys that can just go out there and get their own bucket. I would say Siakam is probably number one. Halliburton number two with who's healthy. And then number three, it's kind of a toss-up. Maybe Nembhard, honestly. So
I'd probably say Nembhard. You know, yeah. Like as good as Turner's been, you don't want Turner doing a lot of dribbling around.
Right.
And you know, we've seen a couple of times where he's dribbled it and had like a mid-range shot. And you're like, okay, all right, you know, that worked out. But, you know, maybe let's not do that too much. Mm-hmm. I think that Mathurin is that guy that can create his own offense. And look, don't show this podcast to a Bucks fan, because they're going to say, oh, boo-hoo, no Benedict Mathurin right now. You know, you guys are your life so hard. But, yeah, I just think the injuries, that they rob you of some great basketball, and I think that as fun as this series has been, we know it could be a completely different series if there was all these guys that were healthy that are not. But at the same point, you know, you can only deal with what you're dealt. And I think that right now the Pacers just need to keep pushing forward and get this series done as quick as they can.
Absolutely, Fachi. Well, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and you're going to let the people know a little bit more about Unified Healing.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like your boy Foch, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. Whether you were Tyrese Haliburton dealing with a hamstring injury that took time to get back to normal, this is why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of Setting the Pace. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or as we like to call it, EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, you're going to want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're in the United States or Canada, it doesn't matter. There's hundreds of other locations across the globe. Access to a center is easy and affordable. How much cash you got on you? Oh, doesn't matter. I bet you could afford Unified Healing and what the EE system is bringing to the table. Now, if you're interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself, go to unifiedhealing.com/pace to learn more and find a center near you. That is UNIFYD healing.com/pace. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare providers with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including the EE system.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, everybody, we're back, and joining us, it's her second appearance on Setting the Pace. It's Maddie Chandler from 8 Points, 9 Seconds. Maddie, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Up 3-1.
Yeah. Up 3-1, Focci. The Bucks are looking a little bit in trouble here. Giannis and Dame are doubtful. Pat Bev is probable, as well as Chris Middleton. But, you know, Giannis and Dame doubtful. It feels like this is a great opportunity for the Pacers in Game 5.
It's a great opportunity, and it's every reason to now feel that the Pacers could blow this opportunity, because you know how it is. We're not there yet to just get the job done, but I also think we're going to get the best Milwaukee has to offer, especially with their fan base as well. Backs against the wall, you got to factor in Bobby Portis is going to be back from that ejection. So I think that you're going to look at a Bucks team that is fighting for their lives, and that's going to be scary. So I think if you're the Pacers going into Game 5, I mean, what is your mentality really when you're trying to get the job done, but you want to keep your foot on the gas?
I feel like, personally, I feel like they're going to go back to Milwaukee, and obviously the fans are going to bring it because it's win or go home at this point. The physicality, I feel like, is going to go through the roof. You know, these teams don't like each other. There was an ejection in the first quarter. I mean, it's going to get kind of chippy. It's going to be a tough game. I mean, it's going to be a test for a young team, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this is one of those opportunities for Indiana to go in there and prove how mature they are as a team by taking out Milwaukee, especially when they are shorthanded. Now, you guys both bring up great points. It is going to be chippy. They're going to be at home, and there's going to be a lot of factors stacked up against the Pacers. But I will say this. Closeout games are the hardest games in a series because the other team is going to do everything they can. They're going to be more desperate and willing to do whatever it takes to get a victory. So I think Indiana, really, if they can handle the first couple of punches from Milwaukee and just keep, you know, setting the pace, for lack of a better term, and really just getting themselves into what they know they can do to beat this team, I think they've got the formula. It was a weird game on Game 4 just because Indiana really wasn't sure what to expect. You know, Milwaukee's throwing crap at the wall, hoping it would stick. But the Pacers were able to kind of weather that storm and figure things out in the second half and kind of put their foot on the gas in that fourth quarter just to pull away. And I just think, talent-wise, Focci, this Indiana team is too good and they're much more talented than Milwaukee with who they're going to have out there to let this opportunity slip and just give them a little bit more room to breathe and say, okay, maybe Thursday Giannis could come back.
Hey, on paper, yes, this Pacers team is far more talented, but you know, like a trapped deer fighting for its life, that's a scary sight. You don't want to mess with that, and I think that's exactly what the Bucks are right now. It's season on the line. You're going to get their best punch, and I think that can Indiana rely on shooting over 50% from three again, a franchise record 22 made threes? To me, I don't think you can count on that. But I think if the Pacers can still continue to play their style of play that we've seen, you know, 30-plus assists in the last three games, they're going to be all right. But what type of, in my opinion, what type of Siakam do you think you might get? Are you going to get Siakam for the first game 1-2 that averaged 36.5 points? Or the guy recently that's been around 15 points, about 42% shooting? I think that's a big question for Indiana as they go back on the road.
I think that's a great point, Fauci. I really like that you brought up the threes because I don't think that they shoot that well again. And I think that they have to figure out something, a different way to keep themselves in the game if they're not hitting threes. And I think that the Bucks, being as hurt as they are, and as, you know, kind of, they've been whittled down to really the bare bones Bucks, and they're older. They're not going to want to get out to contest those shots, and it's going to be really tempting to cast up a gazillion threes a game. You know, whether they're good looks or not, I don't know, but I don't think that the Pacers shoot a franchise record again. That's just, they're going to adjust for that, just like they've adjusted for Siakam after game one. I feel like that's why he hasn't been as effective the last couple games. I think that he's been good. His like collectedness has been good late, but he hasn't been able to be as much of a scoring threat in the beginning of games.
I think everything kind of comes down to what style of play this team plays. Is it going to be a fast-paced thing, or is it going to be a slow-paced game that kind of favors Milwaukee? And I think Malik Beasley actually said it best in his post-game interview when he was talking about the game. He said Obi Toppin came right into the game and had six straight buckets. I think he meant points, but still, I mean, we understand what he means, right? Six straight points, and he said, we're a team that plays great in the half court, but we're not really a team that's going to be able to play great, you know, fast full court, you know, offense. So they can't play full court defense. They're more of a half court defensive team. And I think that kind of explains how the Pacers have been able to kind of get out and get into these big leads, because there's been moments even throughout game three and game four where Milwaukee did make it a slow paced game and they kind of took control of it. And I think if they're able to do that early on, it could get Indiana out of a rhythm. But, you know, the bench unit, I feel like in games three and games four really came in and kind of created that separation for Indiana, with Obi Toppin just going off in the first quarter, both games, and really kind of giving Indiana that extra bolt. But I just wonder, can they do that in a game five on the road without the energy from Gainbridge Fieldhouse? Because I feel like the fans in Indianapolis were incredible, and they willed a couple of those big runs that Indiana had, Fauci.
That crowd was everything, honestly, especially in game three. I just feel like that crowd was off the charts. I mean, even just watching on TV, I felt to an extent that I was there, because that's how lively that crowd was. Yeah, the Pacers aren't going to have that. The Bucks will. I mean, I think even no Giannis, no Dame, this could be the last time they get to see their home team. So I think they're going to come out there and support. And I think that we saw, you know, Milwaukee switch it up a little bit. I think they really played through Brook Lopez a lot more in game four. That's something that we didn't see as much in the first three games. Brook Lopez had 27 points, 9 rebounds. The 9 rebounds was actually, it matched his total from games 1 through 3. So I think that we saw that Brook Lopez wasn't afraid to, A, take it in the paint, but also, you know, stroke it from three. And actually, in this series, he's 10 of 18 from three. So really good percentage. And I just think that Brook Lopez is probably someone we're going to see a healthy dose of. As good as Miles Turner was in game four, I think Turner's got to be a little bit better defensively against a guy like Brook Lopez, who they're going to be counting on just a lot more with no Giannis, no Dame. That's who I think the Pacers have to do a better job defending in game five.
I think that Brook Lopez around the basket was unstoppable. And obviously he's really efficient from three, but I think that everybody has to kind of pick it up on defense. We know that they're capable of, you know, putting together a few defensive stops, whether that's sustainable, you know, over a whole game or not. We don't really know, because they have yet to really do that. But I think that picking it up on defense is going to be key in this one, just being away from home and not having the energy of Gainbridge behind them. I think that getting some stops that's going to allow them to get into transition is the most important part of the whole transition kind of idea of scoring in transition and making that, like, hanging your hat on that skill that this team has. It starts with defense and it starts with forcing turnovers.
It really does. And I think Miles Turner has been very important to this Pacers team. I know that the defense on Brook Lopez has been difficult, especially in the post. I mean, Brook Lopez is just almost twice his size if you look at the, you know, the way they're built. And it's also based on how they both play. I mean, the Pacers have asked Miles to be much quicker, be able to play this fast pace. He probably had to lose some weight to be able to play Tyrese Halliburton-style basketball, or as Caitlin Cooper would say, hot girl basketball, right? So it's one of those things where Turner has made Brook pay for, you know, the weaknesses that Brook has, and I think Brook has made Miles pay for the weaknesses that he has. So I think it's been a very fun matchup, but, like, every national podcast is just talking about how Miles Turner is having a coming out party in this series, and I think that one big factor was the Bucks in the first two games, they had Brook Lopez guarding Pascal Siakam. Siakam goes off in both those games. They switch it and they put Brook on Miles, and then Miles has 29 and 29 in back-to-back games. So it feels like whichever big they have to put Brook Lopez on, they're kind of obliterating that coverage. And to me, if I'm Doc Rivers, I think I might go small a little bit more just to kind of see if they can get Brook more rest and kind of, you know, spread out his minutes a little bit more, because Doc talked about playing Brook too many minutes. I think it'd be interesting to see what an Andre Jackson Jr. and Bobby Portis 4-5 would look like, just because I know that he's a little bit smaller, but I kind of wonder if, you know, Turner has not been the same player when he has a four usually guarding him, someone that's a little bit quicker on their feet, able to stay with him. I wonder if putting Andre Jackson Jr. on him could make it a little bit more challenging and easier for Milwaukee to play switch instead of drop coverage so much, which they're doing with Brook. I don't know if that makes a lot of sense, Foch, but to me, I think I could see them making an adjustment like that.
I honestly thought Andre Jackson Jr. was one of the bright sides for Milwaukee in that last game. He was a +9 in a 13-point loss. He played 25 minutes. That was by far the most minutes he's played. He had 6 boards, 6 points, 7 assists, 3 steals, did a little bit of everything. When you're talking about that matchup, you know, he's just 6'6". So, you know, you're talking about playing smaller. I mean, he would definitely be undersized in that matchup. But I think that when you look at what Milwaukee did differently last game, I think it was Andre Jackson Jr. playing 25 minutes, really being able to take on a bigger role. I think it was Malik Beasley playing a far bigger role as well, stepping into the starting lineup, playing, you know, giving him 20 points on 8 of 12 shooting. I don't know if Milwaukee has any other tricks up their sleeve, but is there anything different that we think that they could make changes-wise in Game 5? Because I think those are some big changes. You're kind of running out of guys in the rotation to really throw out. We saw Danilo Gallinari come out from the past. I don't think we're going to see anything too crazy, but is there anything you know, you might think of differently that Milwaukee could throw out in Game 5?
I think they went to Gallo a little bit, and I really feel like if you're Doc Rivers right now, I'm not sure. I mean, the going small thing is probably your biggest hot take, I guess, as you guys might say. But that's really, your back is against the wall. You're right. But I don't think there's anything else you can do. I mean, because if I'm the Pacers and I see, you know, I see Andre Jackson, Bobby Portis with the 4 and the 5, then I'm going to pull Turner and go small with Siakam at the 5 and maybe look at Obi Toppin at the 4 and just kind of, you know, ramp up the pace even faster than it already is. And I think that's just going to wear them out because they don't have any players left.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. And we have seen their zone be a little bit effective. I feel like they've had moments where they've been able to slow it down, settle into that zone a little bit, make it more difficult. Cause I've felt like there's been quite a few possessions for Indiana where they've taken shots really late into the shot clock. And sometimes they get bailed out by fouls or someone makes a desperation three, but most of the time, you know, the Bucks have made Indiana work for a lot of those possessions, especially when they've been in that zone. And so I just feel like this is where Indiana really, just to me, Fauci, they cannot let up. They have to come out and punch first. I know that I talked about maybe handling the first couple of punches from Milwaukee, but I think Indiana needs a punch first. And basically proved to Milwaukee, like, okay, we're not letting this get back to game six, even though we love our fans in Gainbridge and we'd love to give them an extra playoff one. We don't want to do that. We want to win this one now, and we'll give them another seven-game series, hopefully, with the Knicks or the 76ers, whoever it is. But they can't look ahead. They have to stay focused on this game because, like Rick Carlisle said pregame for game four, so many guys can beat you. Bobby Portis, he's going to probably have a big game coming back after that suspension. I think it's going to be crazy Bobby chance, especially with how the way fans in Indiana treated Bobby Portis. And then Patrick Beverley is going to vibe off that. And then Chris Middleton's just going to do what he does. I mean, I heard Doc Rivers compare him to Paul Pierce, and we know how good Paul Pierce has been in the playoffs, and we've seen Chris Middleton just dominate Indiana pretty much his whole series. He gets what he wants when he wants, and unless he's got tired legs, you don't usually see him missing shots. So I think that, honestly, this is going to be a very, very difficult game, and I'm curious if there's anything else that maybe I haven't brought up that you're looking at, Fauci, as a way that Milwaukee can attack this.
No, I'm just more as – I'm probably – just as nervous about this game as I was about any other one, just because the Pacers have the Bucks on the brink where they can, you know, deliver that final blow. And I think that that's really where the Pacers tend to be their own worst enemy. So I think some of the changes that I really thought we saw was, obviously I mentioned Malik Beasley playing a lot more, Andre Jackson Jr. playing a lot more. I think they tried to play Jay Crowder a little bit more. I didn't see anything really there with that. But one thing that is worth noting is, Patrick Beverley only played 20 minutes last game due to getting hurt early on. During the stretch that he was out is really when Tyrese Haliburton caught fire from three, got some open looks, because as good of a game as Haliburton had with 24 points, he was scoreless in the fourth quarter. And Pat Bev has made things tough on Haliburton. So I guess one of my questions is, do we think that back injury is going to flare up again for Tyrese Haliburton? Because Haliburton said at one point, he didn't know if he'd be able to play last game. We did see him play the fewest minutes out of the starters, but that's something that you got to monitor, because if Haliburton's looking really sluggish in game five, that could take a toll on this Pacers team.
I agree, Fauci. That back injury, that concerns me, truthfully. That's absolutely not what you want to see, you know, from your star point guard, your franchise player in a playoff series, not in the first round of that. But I feel like this game, you know, with all of that uncertainty there with Haliburton, I feel like a lot of people said that game four was the trap game, and I think it very much was, and I think they got over that hump, but I feel like game five becomes a trap game now. I mean, now you have an opportunity to close out the series. You can also, it's not over if you lose. I mean, you can afford to lose a game. You don't want to, obviously, but you can. And then come back home and try to win a game six. And I think that that's gonna say a lot about the maturity of this team, because I feel like they've gone on this like rapid maturity journey, I guess, through, you know, after game one, they got absolutely punched. And then games two, three, and four, they've kind of come back from that and said, okay, well, we're just going to grow from this really fast and gain all this experience and have all this success. So I guess the question becomes like, how do they handle that adversity of like, okay, you can close out the series now, but you don't have to.
Mm-hmm. And on the flip side of this, just to kind of play devil's advocate a little bit, are the Bucks looking forward to vacation and being done with the season? Because with all the stuff they've been up against, right? I mean, Doc Rivers said he doesn't even want to talk to his medical staff because every time he does, it's bad news. And he's like, maybe if I don't talk to him tonight, it'll be good news. I mean, how many of these guys that are on this team, I'm not saying they're going to lay down and quit, but how many of them might have their eyes set elsewhere, especially if Indiana gets out to an early lead? They could just kind of throw the towel and be like, you know what? This year just wasn't our year. Giannis, Dame, Middleton hurt all year. It's just, we just couldn't get over the injury bug. I'm just kind of curious, Fauci, if you think there's any like chance that like you see this Bucks team maybe fold a little bit early if Indiana can come out and play really strong.
I think if the Pacers can jump out to like a 15-point lead, you know, that could break their spirits a little bit. But you just get that feeling that there's going to be a lot of juice behind them playing in front of that home crowd, where it's just that's worth something. I think if the Pacers can, you know, I know they're historically, they haven't been a great first quarter team. And even when they were in game three, they blew that lead. So I think if they can get up, you know, by a solid amount, 15 points or more, maybe that's enough to get the job done. But I think there's going to be a couple players that really aren't going to quit. I think, you know, what we've seen out of Chris Middleton, he's had every opportunity to quit. His ankles have been getting really banged up in this series. We saw Pat Bev come back. You talked about how Bobby Portis, you know, he got ejected. That was a boneheaded decision. He probably feels that he owes the Bucks fans a little something. So I think the Pacers cannot have that type of mentality at all as, oh, hey, you know what, the Bucks, they just want to go to Cancun or vacation or wherever it is. I think they got to be, you know, like you said, Maddie, as mature as possible. And I think that's what we're going to learn about a lot from this team. If they get the job done and they truly do, like, you know, step on the throat of the Bucks team and move on and win this series in five, I think that would shock a lot of people following this team, because the Pacers have kind of been that team that plays with their food a little bit. Let's teams stick around. Let's teams like the Trailblazers or the Bulls or the Wizards or any of those teams not only stick around, but beat them. So that's what kind of has me worried about a little bit too much, is the Pacers' freedom to say, this isn't do or die for us.
I think the availability of Giannis is going to tell us a lot about the Bucks organization's kind of mentality approaching the series. And a little bit of that is just because I think if the series is tied at 2-2 and it's going back to Milwaukee, I think that Giannis is really pushing to play. And the vibe that we're getting from the Bucks and from their players, from, you know, the coaching staff, is that Giannis is going to play if he feels like it's smart. And that phrasing for me feels like it feels like they already are kind of in that headspace of, you know, maybe we can get the bench guys and like the Andre Jackson Juniors and, you know, the Chris Middletons to scrap out a win, and then we'll, you know, we'll go from there. But for right now, like, they're kind of in a hole, it seems like, and I'm not sure that they're convinced that they can be successful enough, you know, deeper into the postseason to really risk Giannis or Dame or even Middleton further.
They got to look big picture, right? They have to look long term, because, you know, Giannis is still in his prime. You don't want to have that lingering, you know, that injury lingering in the next season, because that could really set them back for regular season stuff. And we kind of saw how they struggled with Doc the last 20 plus games or whatever it was, maybe 30 games they played with Doc. They had a losing record. I think that this team has responded well to Doc's coaching in the playoffs. I feel like for the guys they've had out there, they have scrapped. They have played hard. I know that game two, probably Indiana, kind of got away from them a little bit there, but I love their effort in game three, Milwaukee's. I mean, I was just kind of blown away because Indiana got up by 19 points at one point, and the Bucks ended up taking the lead in the fourth quarter. They were resilient. They had every chance to basically steal one in Indy after Indy really blew that lead. And then in game four, like, they were right there. They made a 7-0 run to start the fourth after being down 13. Like, they made it a game with who they had. So they can easily say, yeah, it's not our year. We've had a lot of injuries. But they can also say, hey, we just got to win one, get back to Indy, win one there, come back home. Like, they have two home games left in this three-game series, technically, if you want to call it that. They have to win all three. But I just feel like I don't think the Bucks will lay down. I think that they're too prideful to do that. But I definitely think, you know, Doc Rivers has done a good job with what he's been dealt. And I know Doc gets a lot of hate for all of his blunders he's had. And he knows a lot about, you know, being up 3-1 and how it's easy to come back from, right? So I just think for Rick Carlisle, though, this is a great opportunity for him to get that monkey off his back, since he has not been out of the first round of the playoffs since 2011.
A long time. I mean, and that's, you're talking about 13 years. I mean, there's not a lot of players that are taking the court. Actually, I don't think there's really anyone. Maybe James Johnson, I think, might have been the only player that was actually playing 13 years ago. So it shows just how long it's been. But I think overall for the Pacers, the experience that they could get going to, there's a big difference between making the playoffs and maybe if you get swept or you win one game, and then winning a playoff series. And I think that if we're talking about getting the job done in game five, I think we've seen the Pacers, their strength has kind of been in numbers. It's, you know, last game, six players scored 13 or more points. But if you can think of who could be maybe the person that has to have their A game in game five to get the job done, who would you say the Pacers really need to count on? Because I think lately, Turner's been the most consistent. But at the same point, that's kind of the Pacers' strength, is that on any given night, it could be anyone.
And they've managed without Halliburton scoring. They've managed without, you know, massive scoring outputs from Siakam. I think the answer may be everyone living up to their role. I think in game four, you saw Nesmith hit some threes finally. You know, Nembhard had some really great drives. He made some big plays. Ben Shepherd came in and was productive. Doug McDermott, who none of us expected to see, came in and was actually a positive influence on the game. So I think that it's things like that. Like when you get in the game, I mean, you are just paying attention to detail and making the right plays, you know, guarding your yard, staying in front of dribblers. Like, I think it has to be a collective effort from everyone, because Tyrese Haliburton is going to get people the ball. People have to make shots. And I think that's going to be the difference in this one, because they're going to adjust for everything else. They're going to adjust for Turner making seven threes. They're going to adjust for, they have adjusted for Siakam in everything that he did in the first, you know, first couple games of the series. And Haliburton, obviously, Pat Bev annoys the crap out of him, and he's going to have to figure out how to get over that. But he can, you know, he can be annoyed by Pat Bev and still facilitate. So I think the burden falls on everyone else to just do their jobs.
I will say, I think Ty has adjusted pretty well to Pat's defense, obviously, in game. And we talked, Foch talked about this last episode, you know, in game four with Pat being limited, Tyrese was able to kind of break free and get some open looks from three that he wasn't getting with Pat guarding him. But even in game three, you know, Tyrese had 16 assists and he hit the game winner. So I think that, you know, it's kind of a fun little chess match here for Tyrese to figure out how to score in a variety of ways. And I know that Tyrese isn't putting up Jalen Brunson numbers, so it might not pop off the stat sheet, but I just feel like the way he impacts the game and the amount of gravity he draws from all this defensive attention, it does change the impact of the Pacers. But I go back to what Rick Carlisle said, I don't know if it was about a month or so ago, when he basically said, we don't have, you know, the individual talent to win without playing like a team. And there's been people that have taken that the wrong way, but I think he's actually pretty spot on, because to me, there isn't one guy that can just like carry this team like a Jalen Brunson did over Philadelphia right now. I mean, Pascal Siakam, you know, 36 and 37 was his career high in the playoffs. Like, he's just not accustomed to doing that on the rig. And then the same for Miles. Like, Miles has always been kind of a role player that steps up in big moments, and Ty is still trying to figure out what it takes to do all that. So they are a by committee type team. And I think if everybody, like you said, Maddie, can kind of play their role, that's going to be what's huge. But I do think that the X factor continues to be Andrew Nembhard in this series. I just feel like he's been so calm and collected every single time they've needed a big bucket. There he is, whether it's a, you know, fadeaway two from 17 feet or hitting a three, especially in the corner. Like, he just seems to know the right way to do it. And defensively, I think that with not having to guard Dame, there's going to be opportunities for him to be more impactful, and what ways that can they utilize him to do that? I think you got to make sure you don't let guys like Malik Beasley get hot from three, your Pat Connaughtons, those kind of guys. Let the big three that they have out there of Portis, Lopez, and Middleton do their thing, but limit their role players, because if their role players can get going with that fan base, it could be a bad night for Indiana.
Yeah, it definitely could. But I think this bench from Milwaukee has honestly given them close to nothing in this series. I mean, they have not had someone come off the bench and really make like a big scoring impact, we'll say. Like we said, Andre Jackson Jr. was good, but, you know, 6 points. They haven't had that guy that's given them, you know, 13 or 15 or, you know, anything like that. So I think that's why it's like, okay, yeah, the Pacers, if they can play their style, if they can limit, you know, Brook Lopez to not giving you, you know, vintage 2010 or 2014 Brook Lopez, yeah, things could be different. But if the Bucks are to win, it is because, what would you say, Maddie? What's going right for them?
I would honestly say it's because the Pacers can't guard any kind of two-man game with Middleton and Lopez. I think that's going to be big, because obviously Brook Lopez is just huge. I mean, he's going to be a problem around the rim. And Chris Middleton, you can't, I mean, he is hurt and he's playing on like half an ankle right now, but half the time you forget it because he's still Chris Middleton and he's still playing his heart out. And I think that that's a weird matchup for the Pacers. I think that Aaron Nesmith has done a really good job on him, actually, just knowing him so well. They're both from, you know, from the same area and they compete in the off season, but I feel like that two-man kind of one-two punch, I I don't like to include Bobby Portis in any kind of big three discussion, but I think the 1-2 punch of Middleton and Lopez is going to be that's the thing you have to disarm before kind of proceeding, I guess.
Yeah, I get that too. It's Bobby Portis, man. What a boneheaded play. I know you talked about it, Focci, but I just can't get over how stupid that was on a Middleton foul. Like, they were at the free throw line shooting, and he just got mad because Nembhard – I mean, that's what I like about Nembhard. He just doesn't care. Like, he is fearless, and every fan base is going to hate him, you know, that plays against him. So, if Indiana can get out of the first round, I think – the second round matchup, most likely with the Knicks, is going to be one that we will remember for a long time, and I'm hoping that establishes a new rivalry. We've already got a lot of parallels here with the Wally Szczerbiak comments on Tyrese Halliburton, the Brunson versus Halliburton stuff for Team USA that everybody's upset about, and then you got Pascal versus OG. I'm getting myself excited for this series just thinking about the cinema that it's going to be. But with that being said, I am kind of curious your guys' predictions for game 5, Pacers at Bucks. I did pick the Pacers in 6, but I'm going to go ahead and say that the Pacers win game 5, knowing that the Bucks don't have Dame and Giannis playing. If they play, I think it could be different, but with them being doubtful, I think Indiana wins this one because they know that it's too risky to not bring their best efforts. Focci, what are you thinking?
I'm going to take some heat for this. I think, unfortunately, the Bucks take this one. I wish that's not the case. Mm. But I do think that things have gone too well for the Pacers that I think the Bucks are going to give it everything they got. I think, unfortunately, they probably take this game. I think the Pacers close it out in 6 in Indiana. I would love for them to do it in 5, but my gut just says the Bucks take this one before the Pacers win in game 6.
Yeah, I'm kind of – I'm split on this one too because I see what Focci's saying.
I see it too.
It's personal for a lot of Bucks. It's personal for a lot of Bucks players. Pat Beverly, it's personal. It's personal for Bobby Portis. He got ejected. I mean, it's they've now, you know, they're down 3-1 to the 6-seed. Like, it's a personal thing. And the fans, it's personal for the fans too. So they're definitely gonna bring it, and it's gonna be a hostile environment. It's gonna be a tough game. So if the Pacers can win it, I feel like that shows a lot of maturity. That shows, you know, a lot of growth from a young team in a really short time. But I wouldn't be shocked if they came back to win at home at 6.
So you're picking Bucks for game 5. I'm the only one that has faith in the Pacers for game 5.
I'd love to have the blind faith.
It's really not blind.
I mean, look, it's not blind.
It isn't.
But I'm going to tell you what my gut says. And my gut says, unfortunately, it feels like the Pacers are kind of due for a letdown. And I wish that wasn't the case. It sounds awful to say on a Pacers podcast that we're due for a letdown. But I've just seen it too much this season. So if the Pacers can still get this done in 6 games, I promise you, I'll be just as thrilled. Just win this series no matter how many games it takes.
Yeah, well, not to cut you off, Maddie, but I want to go back to Focci. Okay, what was your gut? Just give me a good idea. What was your gut feeling in game 1? Pacers win or lose?
They win, yeah.
So they lost, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's your gut's been wrong before, right?
My gut's been wrong a lot.
How was your gut in game 4? Did you think they were going to win or lose that game?
Yeah, no. I thought they were going to win that. Yeah.
What about game 3?
Once the Pacers, game 2, I was like, I got to see something. You know, once I saw something like that, I was like, okay, yep, nope, I think we're good. So at this point, you know, the Bucks, the air has come out of the tires. They are deflating. They're on their last legs. I would love to deliver that knockout blow, but I'm just a little bit skeptical because – who would have expected to just win 4-1 after beating them 4-1, you know, in the regular season? Not many. So
Tim Legler said it.
Hey, legs. Yep. And honestly, nobody was really on the Bucks side to begin with. But, you know, after the Bucks took game 1, things flipped really quickly. But Maddie, I'm with you. If we can see the Pacers get this done, the maturity, I mean, where would this be coming from overnight? All of a sudden, we're just the most mature team in the NBA. We'll find out.
I would love to see him win 5, but it's going to be, I think it's going to, it's less that I don't have faith in them and more that I feel like that environment is going to be something unreal in Milwaukee.
If they can't handle that, I don't know how they're going to handle New York. I'm sorry. I think Bucks fans
it's a test for them.
I think Buck fans are going to be excited. I'm not saying they're not, but I definitely don't think the Bucks fans are gonna be as wild or crazy or as hostile as Focci's backyard New York Knicks fans are.
Yeah, when I attended the Garden this year, I think it was in maybe January or so. It was a regular season game. They treated that like an absolute playoff game against the Pacers. I mean, people were even saying, you know, watching on TV, that crowd is something. That was a game in January. You know, right now, I mean, the get-in price for a ticket for Knicks versus Sixers, it's like $500 right now. I mean, these Knicks fans, they are rabid right now. They are rowdy. A lot of my friends are Knicks fans. They've been busting my chops, you know, for days just waiting for this series. And it's just like, why don't you focus on your own opponent right now? But it's like they're riled up. This might be the best the Knicks have been in quite some time, at least since the Pacers bounced them in the playoffs, you know, over a decade ago. But I think this is going to be a really good test for the Pacers. And the more tests that you can take and pass, the better you're going to be in the long run.
Yeah, all right. I'm with Fauci on that one.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, my prediction was the Pacers would lose games 2 and 5, and they ended up losing game one. And before the game started, though, I was like, I don't feel good about this. There's been so much talk about the Pacers just walking in here. I thought Milwaukee was going to come out and really just kind of take control of it, like say, you know what, we're still here. But I was afraid the Pacers might be a little bit nervous too, just because it's a young team. But I think they've kind of settled down. I think they really have. I feel like even their starts, even if they haven't been great, they've been consistent. Like, they've been okay. And they've been able to weather the storm and things like that. But overall, I think it's going to be a fun game five. I think it's going to be close. I don't think it's going to be a blowout either side. I think that Pacers are too talented to get blown out by this version of the Bucks, but I do think that this Bucks team is going to keep it close. It's going to be a fun one, and it's going to be a late one. 9:30 tip-off in Indiana. So make sure you drink some coffee before you get going. But Maddie, before we let you go, let everybody know where they can find you at on social media and plug anything you'd like to plug.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, or X as we have to call it now, at Maddie, M-A-D-I-E underscore Chandler, C-H-A-N-D-L-E-R, like Chandler Bing from Friends.
Okay. Anything you want to plug in terms of like articles, things like that?
Not just go to my Twitter. It's all there.
Okay.
Yeah.
8.9 seconds.
8.9 seconds. Yep. Women's hoops, that kind of thing.
Fever coverage coming up.
Fever coverage coming up. Yeah.
Soon. See, I'm trying to help you. You got to promote yourself. That's what this platform's for, Bocci, right? Promote yourself.
Absolutely.
Put
plug
yourself
away
out there. Don't be casual.
Plug away like an outlet. All right. But no, Maddie, it was awesome having you on. Our first time being able to connect. I know Alex said this was your second time on Setting the Pace, and we look forward to having you back on.
All right. Thanks, guys.
The headlines remind us daily, the world is a dangerous place. The elites in charge say everything's fine, stop noticing. But you know better. And your gut knows that time is short to prepare for a world that is 4 missed meals away from chaos. My Patriot Supply has helped over 3 million families become more self-reliant and is the company Americans trust to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each contain delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Secure at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save $200, plus get free shipping on all their Ready Hour 3-month emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. My Patriot Supply also has solar power generators, water filtration units, biomass stoves, heirloom seeds, and critical survival gear. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.